So as we're going through our Embrace Little Crazy Sermon series, I have obviously had, you know, kind of life's little crazy things on the brain. Last week we looked at some strange laws, like I think it's in New Hampshire, Vermont. If you're a woman who wants to get some fake teeth, don't try to do it unless you get a signed note from your husband, or they won't legally allow you to do that. Or strange signs on different products, like please do not fold your child into the stroller by forgetting to take them out before you start folding the stroller, right? So there's a lot of things out there that we can see. Life can be a little bit strange, but there are different things that we can learn from that too, especially in the Bible and stories that maybe we don't always understand or have trouble believing exactly on first blush, but we want God to take us deeper and help us learn things. So one of the other things that I've had an eye out for is just stories of people doing things that are kind of remarkable or a little bit crazy too. And a little while ago, I came across the story of Guédelon Castle, which is in France. And this is a very interesting castle because they only started construction on it in 1997. However, the person who's funding this and a team of about 50 people are doing the construction of this castle completely with 13th century strategies and tools. They're only finding supplies from the area within a few miles of where they're building the castle. And so they're calling this an archaeological experiment. Their goal is to learn more from actually trying to do the same things that people did centuries and centuries ago than what we could learn just by reading old texts or reviewing pictures and things like that. And they are noticing some things that are maybe different in terms of what it takes to do that than what was assumed. One of the things in particular that they said that they have tried to do is understand safety. So at most construction sites, especially where you're quarrying rock and things like that, you'd want to watch out for steel-toed boots, have things to protect your eyes. And that's the one place where they have sometimes had to make exceptions because they don't want to, they don't see injuries to their staff as just sort of an inevitable part of the process. So they've occasionally made exceptions for extreme safety situations there, but they've been trying to see if they can learn about what safety measures were taken. Because, for instance, like if you don't have some form of safety over your eyes, they said probably all the workers would go blind within a couple days from the quarrying techniques, putting like little tiny rock things all over the place whenever they would try to cut it. And so they don't know exactly what it was, but they've been trying some things out from what they had learned. And what's remarkable is they are not going to complete construction on this until 2030. So it started in 1997, they're 23 years in, they expect to still be going for another 10 years or so. And just so you know, the size of the entire castle is about 50 meters by 50 meters. So it's a little bit bigger than our building. The highest tower goes about 30 meters. But it would fit quite nicely on our front lawn, to be honest. So it's not an enormous thing. But to go through this entire process is still, especially with those strategies, a big undertaking. And it brought to mind for me some other ancient structures that we don't understand and haven't been able to recreate. So they're trying to recreate it with this castle, but many of you have maybe heard stories about like the Great Pyramids in Egypt, right? And how did they move those giant blocks and get them lifted up as high as they could? And they're still trying to figure out strategies that they would have actually used because we haven't been able to recreate it. That's part of the reason why, you know, the History Channel is making bank on ancient aliens documentaries like crazy because they don't have a good explanation otherwise. Same with Stonehenge. How did they move those big giant rocks around and get them stacked up just right and be able to balance? So it brings to mind that idea, like, we can do bigger, more advanced things now, but as part of our moving ahead and all of that technology that we haven't been able to hold on to all of those strategies from a long time ago that also did in their own way remarkable things. I mean, most people wouldn't say, like, you know, stack up the Empire State Building with Stonehenge and say, oh yeah, that weird circle of rocks looks more impressive than that giant skyscraper. But the fact that they were able to do that under those circumstances is something that stumps the very people that could build the Empire State Building. It's almost miraculous. And that shows us the range of ways that things can happen that we don't fully understand and what it takes to understand certain things in our lives. And when we read stories in the Bible of miracles, some of those same questions come before us. What is it that we recognize as miraculous? Are there things that We might take for granted that are miraculous, maybe seem a little bit low-tech, like a Stonehenge or a castle, but that are still remarkable. And is there a way, then, to most deeply understand, experience, and value something of the miraculous in our lives today? And on surface reading, both of our scriptures today are classic Bible miracle stories, right? There's something powerful that happened, and with the information that was available to people at the time, it makes what happened seem pretty unexplainable. So what do we do with those stories? And people take a range of approaches. Sometimes we just say, oh, well, that's a neat story. Jesus did this powerful thing. Our job as Christians is either to read that and say, yep, I believe it, check off the box, and I'm done. That shows I'm a good, faithful Christian. Or maybe I don't believe it, and so then I'm struggling with it. Or if we are not sure what to do with are all things in the Bible a literal history in these stories, then maybe we see them more as examples that show God's love and desire to help people in difficult circumstances, even if it takes something powerful and beyond expectation. But I wonder, then, when we connect that back to our lives, not just wrestling with faith, not just looking at a story as interesting information or something to make a doctrinal conclusion about, how many people here have had examples where they felt like, yeah, I think I've experienced something like a miracle in my own life? Maybe it was a healing from sickness or pain that wasn't expected. Maybe it was a provision of something when things seemed really desperate in a way that came out of nowhere. Maybe it was forgiveness and reconciliation in a relationship that seemed almost impossible and unresolvable. Right? There are lots of different ways that we can see God moving in our lives. And I wonder, how do we talk about it with other people? Is it just a neat thing and we say, that happened, God did something, I'm thankful to God, and move along? And especially, how do we talk about miracles and think about the role of the miraculous within our lives when we are interacting with people for whom their understanding of the supernatural or their belief in the supernatural, their opinion and framework on the supernatural is different than ours? Maybe for some of us, the idea that God did something that we can't explain is very natural. Maybe for some of us, we see God moving through natural means, and we think that that's still good, but we don't see it as being like a bolt of lightning, that it was things that we can understand, like doctors and studies of medicine, whatever it might be, and that is something that has helped come along. And maybe for others of us or people that we know, as we talk about things that are meaningful in our life, it takes some translation and working out with people. How would you see and understand what the impact of God on our daily lives and on our experiences, even when things feel overwhelming? What is that? So my personal one experience of something that might be called miraculous happened actually when I was a baby. So I don't have personal memories of this, but I do have a lot of memories of how my family tells this story to each other. And so this might bring to mind for some of you if you felt like you've had a miraculous experience of some kind. So when I was a baby, I was visiting with my parents, my uncle in Indianapolis, and I just all of a sudden started bawling like crazy and then coughing, and there's a little bit of blood in my coughs. And so they rushed me off to the doctor, and the doctor said, we think there might be something kind of serious going on with Rob's stomach or intestine. We got to get you home to Minneapolis, where we lived at the time. They have a better hospital. We got to get you there as fast as possible. So got me and my parents on the next flight, going to Minneapolis, prepped all the doctors and everything there. I think they were ready even potentially for surgery as soon as we got off the plane, and had everyone starting to pray. Everything seemed like it was going to be normal on the plane flight, but then kind of over Chicago area roughly, all of a sudden, just horrible, terrible, crazy turbulence. And it was freaking everyone else on the plane out. The pilot hadn't thought that there would be some. And however, I went from crying constantly, as I had been from the time at my uncle's house to the drive to the airport to the first part of the plane, to suddenly being very, very calm during the crazy turbulence. Then they landed, I was calm the rest of the time, got to the hospital, they did some scans and said, well, there's nothing currently wrong. As far as we can tell, what was wrong previously is that your intestine had telescoped in on itself. So basically, instead of being a tube all together, part of the tube had tucked into another part of the tube, and it was causing all this friction and pain and other problems with that. And so their best guess was that all the crazy turbulence shook the telescope and free. Now, we can look at that a few different ways. We can look at that as, that's a weird thing that happened. Nice to have all that shaking. Good thing my parents didn't try that out on their own in front of people in public. Never shake a baby! And so if that happens in the future, I don't recommend, like, well, Rob said the shaking on the plane helped, and so... right? Or some people see the hand of God and, like, why did that turbulence happen? Why would that work out so nicely for Rob to be on that particular plane when that happened? We can take a lot of things with that. And so trying to figure out what exactly do we do with the miraculous and all those different explanations that can happen, even for our own personal stories. One really good example that happened for me in understanding the range of things and how we use this in a broader scope happened when I was in seminary and I was taking a class on encountering the divine in art. And my professor had us watch a movie called Millions. I think this came out in the early 2000s. And the main part that we ended up talking about in this class was a little boy who went through some adventures, and I'll explain what those were throughout the movie. But the thing we talked about the most was the part of the movie and part of its portrayal of the miraculous was that this little boy saw visions of saints. And in one particular scene, he sees a vision of St. Matthew. And he's talking to St. Matthew about what it was like to be with Jesus. And he asks him about some of the miracles, and in particular, the feeding of the 5,000 that we read about today. And St. Matthew says, well, you know, the boy's name is Damien, you know, Damien, that was a great miracle, but it's not the way people think that it was. So little boy, not very much unlike you, who happened to have the 5 loaves and 2 fish mentioned in the story. And so when everyone was hungry and grumbling and trying to figure out if they'd stick around or not, the little boy said, well, I have a little bit of food. It won't feed everyone, but I can help out. So he brought his food forward to Jesus and said, Jesus, I want you to share this with as many people as possible. And then all of these other people that saw a little boy like you started to say, yeah, I have like a sack lunch. I was trying to hide it and see if I could get some other food. Or I was worried because there's so many people that they would all want my food and then I would run out. So I can share too. And so his example of love and generosity and selflessness brought on a miracle of other people who had been being selfish, softening their hearts, and having now this big feast that everyone was contributing to throughout the thing. Now, as we discussed that scene, there were some people who felt that the movie, which was actually trying to take the little boy's faith seriously, take the idea of the miraculous seriously, they didn't think the little boy was delusional. That was not how it was portrayed in the movie, for seeing the saints. But they said, you know, that, I mean, saying that there was this just kind of simple, like everybody had some food and they decided to share it, explanation, like that kind of undermines the story, the miraculousness and power of God, doesn't it? Like, that doesn't seem like a great way to tell that story. But there was one student in our class who had worked at food banks at her church a lot. And she, you could tell she was kind of thinking for a little bit as all these comments were going, and then she decided to pipe up. And she said, you know, actually, I actually do think that that's really miraculous. That really spoke to me, because I saw at this food bank in our church, like, we as a society have more than enough food to feed everyone. We even have the infrastructure to get food to people that need it, where we wouldn't even need food banks. We could just have other means of allowing people to get food if they needed to. But we have to have food banks, because the miracle from this little boy that happened to the rest of the 5,000 of the crowd that Matthew talked about hasn't happened for all of us in our society. We haven't figured that out together. And so we do have food banks that are like a part of the miracle maybe that God is doing, but it's still maybe not the full miracle that can happen to solve hunger in our society. And then others start chiming in with similar problems that they've thought of that we haven't completely solved because there hasn't been a miracle of like willingness and urgency coming to people. That might be things like clean water in parts of the world where they don't have access to clean water. That might be things like bringing justice for people who have been sexually assaulted, and we don't even investigate more than half of those right now. All sorts of things like that, that even that just miracle of the heart is something that God can continue to be moving in. And so, in hearing that story, that interpretation of the miracle for me flipped from being like a competing narrative. Do we come up with a natural explanation and then we don't feel like the Bible is weird? Or do we stick with the most supernatural explanation and that helps us protect God's power, we think? Or is there a fullness in miracles that we need to embrace more broadly? And so in these miracles, I think we see a fullness if we look deeper and closer. But if we only say, well, God did something kind of unexplained, that's great, move along, that we might miss the fullness of those miracles. And I'm not trying to say, by the way, that we cannot believe and find hope and encouragement in the movement of God, even in ways we don't understand or explain. I think that still happens. I've heard lots of stories about that. However, I do think that it's worth, again, and we'll see why, seeing a fullness of the miraculous in our lives, even beyond that. So on the one hand, in both of these miracles, is we see that there's provision. Provision from the unexplained for people that were going through a hard time. Food for the 5,000, oil, and then money that could come from that for the widow. But we also see other miracles that are often things that don't end up actually turning out for people. So one thing is the assumption of valuing people's dignity and taking responsibility for a situation that you could have said, I'm just going to let that pass by. In both cases, the people who responded from the leading of God could very easily have said, that's not my responsibility, you're just bothering me, this is too much of a bother, this is too much of a problem, let somebody else deal with it, or you should pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, or whatever it is. But instead, Elisha, Jesus saw, this is a person who God loves, who has need, and that I have something that can help that person in their circumstance. And so I will take responsibility. Jesus specifically says, don't send the crowd away. That could have been an option. But instead, we'll do something together. Similarly, in both stories, we see a special type of miracle in where there could have been isolation or individuation, and instead, the act of either God's supernatural movement or whatever was happening with people brought the community closer together in a way that they couldn't have been otherwise. For Jesus, there's a risk of people just being a face in the crowd. When there's 5,000 people, probably the best thing to do is just like line them up, get a stack of food, swing on by, let's do it as efficiently as possible, and whatever else. Jesus does a really interesting thing, though. He has them break into groups of 50, kind of like what we have right here. And suddenly, you're not just a face in the crowd anymore. You're not a number. You're not anonymous. You have the chance to sit next to somebody, to look across from somebody, to look them in the eye, to see their face, to understand more of what they're feeling and experiencing in that moment, to have some conversations that bring you closer together. And that's done in a way, sharing time, having the chance to connect, understanding each other better, that you wouldn't do if we just said, here's 5,000 people, figure out what to do from there. So the miracle is also creating community. And the same thing is true for the widow. Again, Elisha could have said, I think God's just going to just keep dipping your little spoon or ladle or something in your oil, and I'll bet it just won't run out. You've got a barrel. You've got some oil. Just keep going, and let's see if it actually ends up running out. But instead, Elisha connects the widow to all of the people in her community. Each of them come and bring a little bit of what they have. Each of them connect with the widow. Each of them remember that the widow is a part of who they are when they could have just said, well, you had your husband, now you don't, figure it out. And there's a miracle in helping her not be isolated. There's a miracle that doesn't just solve a problem in that one moment, but creates miracles that can continue from then on. And that transforms people's view of God, people's view of themselves, and how they and others can operate in a world because of how God moves and because of what values that God gives us. And so, again, it's really important, most of all, that those miracles didn't just solve a problem in the moment. but it suddenly gave people a chance to keep experiencing miracles from then on out if they kept doing the types of things that Jesus and Elisha continued to have them do. They might not make as dramatic of a story, they might not seem as big a deal, but day after day, week after week, encounter after encounter, new miracles can happen if they keep doing those types of things. Now, ironically, Wendy also had an experience in her life of her intestine telescoping. That was part of the symptoms that she had when she was born, 2.5 months premature when she was a baby. Now, she did not get on a plane and have that healed right away. For Wendy, the experience was being in the ICU for 5 or 6 months, having a couple surgeries, and she still has a big scar from that, and there's a reminder of that all the time. And yet, her presence still with us, her health still with us, is its own type of miracle, even though it's not as dramatic or sudden or instant as me being shooken up by a plane. And there were probably times that her family wished would have been really nice to just have that solved in one thing. Maybe, why couldn't we get on a plane and have that happen? And there are probably times that all of you have had struggles that have continued and thought, I wish that something would just break in and get this solved as fast as possible. Or maybe you even have seen healing come, but it didn't come as fast as you thought. And you went through a difficult experience. But I know that Wendy's family understood something about miracles from that experience. They do see the world a different way. They look at people who are going through their own times of crisis and struggle in a different way. They're more aware. They're more responsive. They understand and empathize with the worry and the struggle of ongoing problems in a way that my family and I would like to, but I don't think we do quite in the same way that her family does. And so they do have those same continuous miracles, I think, in how they reach out to people and think about that type of extended, struggling, persevering, supporting, coming alongside, companioning miracle that happened for them. And that's true, by the way, in the whole movie of Millions as well. It ends up being a movie about miracles in a really interesting way, even though that one story seems to undermine what we think of this classic miracle and maybe acts like it's questioning God. The general story of Millions is that Damien and his brother and his father have to move to a new place after their mother died, and they're really struggling. They're mourning their mother. They're struggling financially. They go play in a field, and a giant bag of money seems to fall out of the sky. And the boys find it and feel like, that's a miracle. We're going to be fine. We can take care of ourselves a little bit. We can help other people. And at first, the movie seems like it's a struggle between how much of this do we use for ourselves, how much of this do we use for other people. But through a series of misadventures, the miracle of the money changes, and the meaning of that miracle changes. Turns out, and Damien finds out that the money didn't come from God falling out of the sky to help them in their worries and in their struggle. The money was thrown off of a train that someone was robbing, and they were throwing it off the train to come back and find it later. So the robbers are coming after them to try to find the money. The authorities are coming after them to try to find where the money went. And even as they're trying to fight over and decide, do I give money to my family? Do I give money to other people? They start to find that as they just start throwing money at problems, that it's not seeing the whole problem. It's not seeing the whole person behind the problem. And that's causing more issues for them as well. And so ultimately they decide, you know what? We thought that this money was going to be a certain thing for us, and it's not. And so we're just going to burn the money. And that's what was going to happen to the money eventually. The story was that as England was transitioning from the pound to the euro, that this money was all going to, it was on a train to go to an incinerator. So they decided, we're going to destroy it too. And it turns out then that the miracle of Millions was not the money falling out of the sky. It's not all the things that the money on its own could do. It was the things that Damien and his brother and his dad and the people around them learned by going through that experience and struggling with what role should this money or any money play in my life? How should I view other people that may need help? What does it look like to be supportive, to be just a family of little, small, ongoing miracles all the time? And the end of the movie, we are told that because of those experiences, Damien goes off to Africa to help communities build wells that they can maintain locally. And that all the people in the story that he interacted with ended up giving in some way, either by volunteering or by their own financial donations, to those wells so that something could be done better. And in a way that had more impact than just a lump of money could have even done being sent to the same thing. And so that's where we see the fullness of miracles. Again, this is not about questioning or picking at how anyone decides to believe about supernatural stories in the Bible, but saying at those stories, there is more than God just doing one thing in one moment for one problem for people. We want to see the fullness of everything that's happening. When God moves, God not only brings provision, but that God brings extra dignity and extra worth to people. God brings communities together in a way that is in itself miraculous, because we know how much of a struggle those things sometimes are. And so we want to be able to embrace the little crazy of miracles, even beyond, do I believe in something that seems unbelievable or not? Can I be a part of a community that continues to do all the things that are miraculous, all the parts of connecting with each other, all the parts of supporting each other, all the parts of going out of our comfort zone a little bit, and seeing what God will do within that and to maximize it, often even in ways that we will not be able to explain. And that is how God will bring that healing and wholeness, not only to us, but also to all of those around us. And so what I hope that we can do in hearing these stories and thinking about all of the different ways, not only that we can interpret them, but that all the different ways we can see God actually moving in them, that will help us be a community that lives in the fullness of miracles in as much of our lives as possible. In our community, we want provision to happen, but not just in one moment or circumstance. We want to know that we're circling back with each other. In our community, we want to be a part of everyone being valued and everyone having dignity and everyone being recognized and affirmed, especially if a lot of people say, thinking that person is worth even a minute is a miracle in itself for me, because I would rather just avoid it. We want to be a community where if there's a need, that we would be part of a solution instead of finding excuses to not worry about it. And we want to be a community that knows, by the way, that heartbreak can still happen. And so we'll keep walking with each other in those moments when it seems like the solution that we were hoping for didn't happen. Because making someone feel like they didn't fail because a miracle didn't come, or asking someone to pretend that they're not angry or disappointed or confused or sad because they are in a moment of struggle, but instead being a community that shares pain, that perseveres to the unexpected, and that goes on difficult paths together, that's its own type of miracle. I know that there are probably many people who can remember a time where something didn't happen the way you thought, and the way that you felt afterwards just magnified the problem. And if someone could have come alongside you and said, it's okay that there's struggle, that could have made an enormous difference, and especially you would have felt guilty otherwise. And so ultimately, I want us, and I hope you want us, to be binding together however we can, with whoever we can, and noticing whatever things we can that might be overlooked so that we can value those who are otherwise disregarded. Because we know that if we can do that together in the fullness of the miraculous, that those are the exact conditions that God will use for miracles big and small, of all types, that will help us experience the wholeness of God's life together as God's family. Think about ways to do that and all the things that miracles can be. We'll now have a prayer for our offering as we think about what we give for God to do miraculous things with.